Sarah and Vicky, between them, dragged the pilot's body out of the cockpit. He was a big man, heavy in the shoulder and belly, and the blood oozed from the bullet hole in his temple into the thick mop of his hair as he lay on his back in the short grass under the wing. Vicky turned away from him and scrambled up into the cockpit, settling herself behind the controls.
"Jesus!" said Jake, relief shining on his face. "She said she could fly!"
A rifle bullet spanged against Priscilla's hull and went wailing away over their heads. Gareth glanced down at the pilot's body.
"He was a big'un, poor beggar."
"There's room for one more now,"
Vicky shouted from the cockpit.
"With both of you, we'd never make it over the mountains."
And they saw what torture the words caused her. Another bullet clanged against steel.
"We can only take one more."
"Spin you for it."
Gareth had the silver Maria Theresa in his thumb, and he grinned at Jake.
"Heads," said Jake.
And it spun silver in the sunlight. Gareth caught it in the palm of his good hand and glanced at it.
"Head come.
Your turn at last." Gareth's grin lifted the corner of his mouth. "Well done, old son. Off you go." But Jake caught the wrist and twisted it. He glanced at the coin.
"Tails," he snapped. "I always knew you were a cheat, you bastard."
And he turned away towards Vicky.
"I'll cover the takeoff, Vicky. I'll keep Priscilla between you and the eye ties as long as I can."
Behind him, Gareth stooped and picked up a stone the size of a gull's egg out of the grass.
"Sorry, old son," he drawled, "but I owe you two already."
And tenderly he tapped Jake above the right ear with the stone held in the cup of his hand, and then dropped the stone and caught him under the armpits as his legs sagged and he began to collapse. He put his knee under Jake's backside and with a heave boosted him head first and unconscious through the cabin door. Then he put his foot on Jake's protruding posterior and thrust him further into the cramped cabin until he could slam and lock the door. Rifle fire pounded and crashed against the screening hull of Priscilla. Gareth reached into his inside pocket and pulled out the pigskin wallet. He dropped it through the side window into Vicky's lap as she sat at controls.
"Tell Jake if I'm not there on the first to cash the Lidge's check and buy you a bottle of Charlie from me. When you drink it, remember I really did love you."
Before she could reply, he turned and darted back to the armored car and scrambled up into the driver's hatch. Side by side, like a team in harness, the car and the little blue aircraft ran side by side down the open field, and the Italian fire drummed against the steel hull of the car. Then slowly, the heavily laden aircraft drew ahead of the speeding car. But by then they were beyond effective rifle range, and as Vicky felt the puss moth come alive and the wheels bumped clear of the rough turf, she glanced quickly backwards. Gareth stood in the driver's hatch, and she saw his lips move as he shouted after her, and he lifted his bandaged arm in a gesture of farewell. She didn't hear the words, but she read them upon his lips. "Noli illegitimi carborundum," and saw the flash of that devilish buccaneer smile before the aircraft lifted away from the earth, and she must turn all her attention back to it. Gareth halted Priscilla at the edge of the field, and he stood in the hatch, shielding his eyes with his good hand, and watched the little blue aircraft climb laboriously into the thin mountain air. Again it caught the sun and flashed as it turned unsteadily towards the gap in the mountains where the pass led up to the highlands. His whole attention was fixed on the dwindling speck of blue, so that he didn't see the three CV-3 tanks crawl out of the main street of the village, 500 yards away. He was still staring upwards as the tanks stopped, rocking gently on their suspensions, and the turrets with the long spandrels traversed around towards him. He didn't hear the crash of cannon, for the shells struck long before the sound carried to him. There was only the earth-stopping impact and the burst of shell that hurled him from the hatch. He lay on the earth beside the shattered hull, and he felt downwards with his good hand, for there was something wrong with his stomach. He groped down, and there was nothing where his stomach should have been, just a gaping hole into which his hand sunk, as though into the soft, warm flesh of a rotten fruit. He tried to withdraw his hand, but it wouldn't move. There was no longer muscular control, and it grew darker. He tried to open his eyes and then realized that they were wide open, staring up at the bright sky. The darkness was in his head, and the cold was in his whole body. In the darkness and the icy cold, he heard a voice say in Italian, "È morto." He's dead. And he thought with mild surprise, "Yes, I am. This time I am." And he tried to grin, but his lips wouldn't move, and he went on staring up at the sky with pale blue eyes. "He is dead," repeated Gino. "Are you certain?" Count Aldo Belli demanded from the turret of the tank.
"Si, I am certain."
Warily, the Count climbed down the hole. "You are right," he agreed, studying the man. "He is truly dead." Then he straightened up and puffed out his chest. "Gino," he commanded, "get a picture of me with the cadaver of the English bandit." And Gino backed away, staring into the viewfinder of the big black camera.
"Chin up a little, my colonel," he instructed.
Vicky Camberwell brought the Puss Moth out over the final crest of the pass with a mere 200 feet to spare, for the small overladen aircraft was fast approaching its ceiling. Ahead of her, the highlands stretched away to Addis Ababa in the south. Below her, past the thin, raw, muddy, bisecting lines of the Desi Road. She saw the road was deserted. The army of Ethiopia had passed. The fish had slipped through the net. But the thought gave her no pleasure. She turned in her seat and looked back, down the long, gloomy corridor of the Saadi Gorge. From the cliffs on each side of the gorge, the rainwater still fell in silver-white waterfalls and muddy cataracts, so that it seemed that even the mountains wept. She straightened up in her seat, and lifting her hand to her face, she found, without surprise, that her own cheek was wet and slick with tears.